It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. I have found something that annoys me this week.
What's that?
It's actually annoyed me for a while, but I enjoy when I can do these cold opens. It's like, you know what really grinds my gears? You know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
And this one is, again, as so many of them are, it's weirdly specific.
Okay.
I hate when people who are waiting for their order at Culver's don't pull far enough forward.
In the drive-thru or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a thing, because at Culver's, like, there's a few different places that are like, we make your food fresh, so order it, and then you're going to sit for a while, goddammit. Steak and Shake does that. Wendy's sometimes does that. I mean, everybody does it occasionally, but like, there are places that are sort of built around that model. Culver's is the biggest one. Like, okay, if you're ordering food, you're gonna be there for at least a few minutes.
Okay,
that's how it works. It's fine. They have, especially the Culver's where I'm near, but also I've seen other, they have a real long thing after the drive-thru where like 6 or 7 cars could wait.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, there's not a lot of people there, and so you don't pull that far forward because there's not, it's not like it's going to get backed up. I appreciate this. I do this sometimes because you also don't want to make it as hard on the dude who has to walk out and give you the food by making him walk further. But if you're going to do that, you have to keep your eyes open. And if you see cars and you pull ahead, every time I go there and I like take the thing and I go up and I can barely make it out of it because there's like 2 cars ahead of me and that's it. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. there's cars behind me. So mm-hmm. one car makes it to the register and the other cars are just fucking waiting for no reason.
Yeah.
Pisses me off. And I always, as soon as they're out of the way, like I drive way out to the end because I'm like, I'm not causing this problem. But annoys the shit out of me, and like it has no impact on me at that point. It's usually, I very seldom have I run into a situation where I'm the one stuck because they won't move forward.
Yeah.
So it has no, it, to me it's very much a, we're living in a fucking society, people. What are you doing?
Yeah, right.
And I mean, I get like I'm, you pull up where you want to pull up, but watch, you gotta watch
people. Yeah
and like the urge to honk or like make faces and shit is so strong. And I'm like, there's no way that helps things at all. So
I think there are a lot of things like that that are just basic conscientiousness that you just wonder why a person is not paying attention to what's going on around them and trying to consider what other people are dealing with.
Yes, but then you have to watch out that you're not like, because at this last time that it happened, there was this one car and I could see the person. There was one person alone, and I saw them. And then I saw the kind of car it was and the condition the car was in. And I started profiling the shit out of this person about, like, how their life is and what kind of – and I was just like, this is not a healthy thing to do. I'm building this image of, like, what a scuzzball person this is. Based on a bunch of superficial shit and the fact that they didn't pull far enough forward in Culver's. And I know some of you would say, isn't that also superficial shit? No, that is my entire point. It's not. But the rest of it was.
Yeah, I've grown up, I grew up in a family.
Me too.
That, what are the odds? No, I grew up in a family that had so many junky cars, and I've personally had so many junky cars. As you know, I mean, when we worked together, I drove a pickup truck to work that if if someone breathed on it wrong, it would have fallen apart in a pile of rust.
And I and my family have had nothing but junky cars. But then a couple years ago, I bought an almost new Nissan Rogue, and now I'm on another level. And I look down on you people.
Yeah, I've been in situations where a person, like I'm riding with someone and there's a parking space fairly close to where we're going, and they skip that parking space and park somewhere else. And I ask them, what did you do that for? Well, look at the car I would have had to park next to. And I look at it and I can see that, you know, it's not the best looking car, or maybe it's got some damage on it or something. And I actually have to take a second to realize what they're talking about. And I have to go, oh yeah, you're basically judging the driver of the car based on the,
oh, the car is so fucked up. Clearly they drive badly.
Yeah. They're going to ding my car, run into it.
Interesting.
Which I even though I've learned that some people think that way, I still don't, again, because I was, because I come from a family who had junky cars. I come from a family who had junky cars. And so I just don't tend to judge people based
also,
on what some people do.
There's more than one party involved in any car accident. This is like what drives me crazy when people don't do crap like seatbelt, or they think they can drink. They're like, I'm really good when I drive a little buzzed, or I'm fine and I'm a good driver. I won't need a seatbelt. And I'm like, first of all of this is bullshit. But second of all, even if it's true, what about the 1,000 shitty drivers you encounter on your half mile trip to pick up ice cream?
Right.
Like, you can be the best driver in the world. You can still get fucked up by cars.
Yep, that's right.
And on that note, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that I can definitely officially say is not sponsored by ACT. They were very clear about that in the meeting today. I'm going to have to change my Facebook status very soon here. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 484.
Yes. Before we get into that, for reasons that I will also get into after that, I feel like I should explain what the show is about. I feel like it's very important, potentially, this time.
Okay.
For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It is magical, in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks, all sorts of people, tons of great, wonderful people, anybody who wants to help us out or just has a question or whatever, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written physically on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's self-employed servants draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it.
I feel sorry for all the people who just listened to the podcast and don't watch the video and didn't see your great
jazz hands.
There were
a lot of
hand
motions this
time. Yeah,
a lot of jazz hands. I'm really getting into this video angle. I don't watch video podcasts hardly at all, but the fact that we're doing this. Although, as I mentioned earlier to William, some of you may notice my voice may sound different, and also that my camera is absolute horse shit. It looks like I'm trying to send a message from the 50s. So to stop some sort of apocalyptic scenario later on. I mean, this is up there with the Zapruder film. Like, I mean, a murder could be happening behind us and we wouldn't be able to prove anything from it. Like, this video might show strong evidence of the presence of ghosts. I would have no idea. It's because we are using the camera on my personal laptop, which I haven't used in ages and apparently super sucks. Because as of today, well, okay, for official reasons, as of July 10th, but in practical reasons, as of today, I now no longer work for ACT. I and a bunch of people were laid off. Our positions were eliminated and they're paying us through July 10th, just normal pay. They're also giving us severance, but But today's our last day, and as of about an hour ago, they cut all our access and everything. So I couldn't use my work computer, which is both where we record this stuff and the place that had the professional Zoom license. But I have bought myself a year of professional Zoom license because in addition to this podcast, I have multiple gaming groups that use it. So it's very important. So we're still all set, but it means we're dealing with my equipment and not works. So it's not as cool. But who knows, that may change. So yeah, I am now unemployed.
So, and you told me this earlier, and you also, we discussed, because this didn't come out of nowhere. There were some,
no.
And there were some indicators.
Like, I'm, for the record, I'm not mad at anybody. I'm sad.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you're feeling.
I'm not super worried because, as I have mentioned many times before, Trish makes the money, and Trish's position is pretty darn safe. And I'm not mad. I don't think this was like handled poorly or any. I think it was a perfectly fine decision. As with everybody else, ACT is having some financial issues because of Rona. People aren't testing. For a while, we couldn't do testing because of that. But now we can, but people aren't signing up because they don't want to go and do testing. And we don't really, like, they would have to do that in some states. That's not even an option. And people just aren't going for it. And yada, yada, yada. So we're short some money. And the first thing they did, I talked about before, were these voluntary elections to help save things, reduced hours. A lot of people just opted to leave because, like, early retirement or things like that, and a leave of absence, which is what I was going to do in the fall. It was great. More people did it than I expected. They saved more money than they expected. Still not enough. And so they did a bunch of things. And in particular, there was a massive reorganization. Sort of the place I was in will no longer exist. And chunks of it went to other places, and some of it just was made redundant, but it's also across the whole company. I didn't know this because this hasn't happened before. Apparently, because I'm over 40, I get a special document, I think called a WARN document, which stands for something.
That is correct.
That lets me know all of the positions that were eliminated so that I can verify that it's not, you know, just me. Like, I think potentially as evidence against potential ageism, as I understand it.
That is correct, yes.
All I know is I was given a list that told me exactly who was getting let go in the whole company, which I was like, wow.
I don't know when this started, but there is some kind of regulation out there where if you're over 40 and your position is eliminated, I mean, if you're fired for cause, it's a...
There
might be things you have to do there too, but specifically if your position is eliminated, there are certain procedures they have to go through to cover themselves for, like you said, the potential of being accused of letting you go because of your age and possibly your higher, because a lot of people who are older also have higher incomes.
Yeah. So there's an excuse that, oh, they're just getting rid of me because I get paid more, and then they'll bring somebody else in and so you have to cover for that.
That's right.
But yeah, so I saw that, and it is all over the company. And so because it was, I knew this was a possibility, and, you know, I have my network of connections. So I was pretty sure it was going to happen hours before it happened. But what I was not expecting is that today would be my last day and they were canceling all my accounts and stuff. So I suddenly was like, I got a shit ton of stuff I got to get done before 5. I had stuff on there that was just like my stuff. Cause like I said, we game on there. So I had gaming stuff on there and things. And so I wanted to grab all of that. And then, you know, silly me, I had a couple of work things that I wanted to at least, you know, put in other people's hands, stuff like that. So then I did that. And where was I going with this? I don't know. So I was doing that a lot today. And then I set up this stuff for Zoom and all that. it hit me harder than I thought. I kept saying it was not going to be a big deal for me. And I still think it is way less for me than most. And like, they're paying me through a certain time and I'm getting enough severance that basically it'll be the equivalent of me continuing to work through like mid-November. So in the short term, it's going to be more money because we already weren't going to have me working this fall.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to get paid through all that time. Trish and I have a lot of things to talk about, but I do still want to, in the short term, well, yeah, just in general, in the short term, I want to make an attempt at some things, make an attempt at working on the house, make an attempt at the writing, things like that. and see where that goes. And then, you know, we can talk based on what the budget looks like. It's just sudden.
Yeah.
And that's a big shock. And I'm going to miss the people that I have worked there for 9 years, almost exactly 9 years. I really like the people. I always liked my coworkers. I had like five or six bosses. They were all awesome, which I know is incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
Nothing against ACT, just bosses in general. Right. It was a great run. And especially in recent time, I've realized that I was like very much loved and appreciated and all that. And it's really come in now. I think I've talked before about Uncle Tony's mailing list.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I did my goodbye.
Sure.
I just sent it out over that whole mailing list. And then I also put my coworker area in there because not all of them were on that list. But I wrote a pretty serious thing and I waited sort of till the end of the day to send it. And I got back a ton of responses. And then it was the end of the day for me. So I set an out of office that was like, you know, you're going to have to hit me up on my Hotmail account now because I'm gone. And I've already received like 8 of those. Like the outpouring of well wishes and missing me is impressive, especially on a day where tons of people are being let go. I'm even getting these messages from people who are also being let go. So, I mean, it's been really sweet. But as I've said before, it's always been an ad hoc. Nobody was allowing me to do this. It was my little private radio station. And so especially today, I was like, fuck it. So at the end of it is a blatant plug for this podcast.
Oh, so that's why you felt like you needed to.
Yes. So there is a decent chance that we will have at least some new listeners possibly starting tonight. And if you are, as my wife pointed out, as crazy and wacky as I am, I do, she was like working, cause she's been working from home with me. So she's nearby. She's like, you do actually have a professional presence. Like you're not exactly the same in person, like at home as you are at work. So some of you may be in for a shock. On top of that, we have a little back and forth that we do here in this podcast, and I am solidly the bad guy. So, I mean, I used to say, anybody who wanted to listen, like, you can't hold what you hear against me at work, but I'm not at work now, so, you know, whatever. and as I mentioned twice in my plug on my email, it's terrible. This whole podcast is awful, but it's consistent.
Yeah, so, consistently bad.
Yeah, yeah. So make of it what you will. So that's enough on that. I don't want to talk about that anymore because it's not good radio. And I got other shit too, and you got other shit. How's your week been?
Man, there were a lot of things I kind of wanted to talk about, but now I don't know if I
can remember them
or really feel like talking about them. There was one thing, because you kind of mentioned it, about how our podcast is – terrible.
Yeah. Really,
you know, I've listened to or really watched, because a lot of podcasts are on YouTube, and I usually watch them rather than just listen to them, and that's been very informative, because there are some very popular podcasts that are really not better than ours. I mean, the people are famous, right? And sometimes the people talking have an expertise in something that's super interesting that we don't have. but the actual quality of the conversation, like if you took certain podcasts and you did a transcript of them and you replaced the names with like letters so you couldn't tell who it was.
Yeah.
And you did the same thing to our podcast and you put them up next to each other, except for the occasional, in some of these other podcasts where maybe some expert has something interesting to say about their area of expertise, except for those moments, they're just shooting the breeze conversations, aren't really more interesting or insightful or anything than ours is.
And some of the, I mean, our formula, you know, having a magical hat with his own email address, our format is by no means unusual.
Yeah.
Basically just an excuse for people to get together and chat with one or the other premises to throw in prompts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not doing like what's in the news this week, but I mean, essentially.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it comes to chemistry between the people.
Yeah.
And a bit how entertaining a speaker one is. And then, sure. Of course, in terms of success, celebrity is huge.
Yeah. And the ability. You know, and the ability to get guests who are famous and
yeah. And that ship sailed years ago. I've said many times over the years that I stopped, that I secretly hoped we would someday become famous and that I had stopped believing that. And then later I would say I lied and I did still think we might be able to. And now, but I mean, it's been years since I've cared. But yeah, no, you're not frozen up. You're just really boring. All right. I seriously thought you froze up and I was like, oh crap. And then I'm like, oh wait.
Nope, just me.
All right.
Oh, well, there was another thing I thought of was the whole foundation thing when we were talking about foundation.
Right. We should talk about it here because not everybody knows. So last week, somebody asked about books that we wanted to see done into movies and TV. And I said, I thought Isaac Asimov's Foundation series would be really good. And then like, 3 days later, YouTube's like, hey, want to watch this trailer for the new series Foundation based on Isaac Asimov's book? And I was like, get out of my head, YouTube.
Well,
and then we watched it and you noticed it's going to be David Goyer.
Yeah.
God damn.
Well,
it is not a good sign.
Another interesting thing, because another thing that came up, you mentioned Foundation, but you also were surprised that I didn't mention it because you know that Foundation is a huge property for me. Asimov is a huge property for me. I mean, most people know that I was never a fiction person when I was growing up. I didn't get interested in fiction until I was in college. And Asimov not only was one of the first things, pieces of fiction, probably the first thing I read, but then it seemed to be completely geared, especially for me. I mean, as a sociologist, psychohistory was like the perfect concept to have in a story.
It does crack me up that your love affair with fiction started in college, because most people I know, college are the years where they stop reading fiction.
But I mean,
for like 4 years, because they just have other crap going on.
I mean, I've got Asimov books all through here, nonfiction and nonfiction. I mean, it does seem like the top fictional works for me are basically Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and the Foundation series. And so it does seem like if someone asked me, well, what would you like to see adapted? I'd say Foundation right away. But the fact of the matter is, I think this is true for a lot of people, sometimes the fictional thing they like best that hasn't been adapted is the one they want to see at least.
It wouldn't be good.
Yeah, and you don't want to see it messed up.
Yeah, like how people said that for years over Watchmen, and they were super right. although that HBO series, which is not a Watchmen series, it's a sequel Watchmen series, is amazing, and I highly recommend it to anyone. It's very good. But yeah,
we've watched a couple episodes of that, but I don't want to talk about it till we're done with it.
You're not done. Oh yeah, get through it. Yeah, I mean, it takes twists and turns and stuff, and your feelings about it will change over time. Yeah.
So I do want to talk about how I felt about the trailer, but I want your opinion also. So which one of us should start?
Well, mine's quick, so.
Okay, go ahead.
Yours will be 20 minutes, so.
Not that long. It's a little involved.
It's a good-looking trailer. It looks like it could be a good sci-fi show. I mean, if they hadn't tossed in a couple of character names and the word psychohistory, nothing about it remotely looked like Foundation. And I can't imagine it will be. I think it has the potential to be a good sci-fi show. I think there's no way it even could be a good Foundation adaptation.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, when I watched it, nothing about it made me think, oh, wow, I can't wait to see this. In fact, most of what I saw made me think, oh, this is probably
going to look pretty. Like, if I didn't know the material, I'd be like, ooh.
But here's what I want to talk about in relation to it that I am interested in. And that is that they clearly gender flipped a couple characters, which is cool because, you know, Asimov uses
these. But also absolutely fucking necessary.
Oh, certainly. I mean, Asimov uses these weird names, so it's easy to gender flip. You don't have to change the name or anything because none of the names are like sound gender specific or anything.
But it was what, the 50s. They were all big, strong white men. Like,
yeah. Everyone. Well, and also one of the gender flipped characters also is not white. And when I read any of Asimov's stuff, actually, you always could tell what sex the person was you were reading about, but he didn't always make it very clear. Any, like, you know, like, I don't know if a lot of characters he said they were white or described their skin tone or anything.
I think you're correct. I think there was enough assumptive at the time. Yeah.
Although in later books, I believe this was in, because in the Foundation series, if you read them in narrative order, the first book you might read, Prelude to Foundation, is actually the last one that he wrote.
Yeah, because he wrote a prequel trilogy and then the original trilogy and then a sequel trilogy, not in that order.
I think in Prelude, it was either in that one or Forward Foundation, which was another one that was a prequel book. One of those, there was actually a discussion about, so in Foundation, Earth exists, but everyone's practically forgotten it. And a few people that talk about it, they're considered wackos. It's just a myth or whatever. But in one of those books, narratively, it's one of the first two books, but chronologically, it's one of the last, it's the last two books. I think it's Harry Seldon too, but I don't remember for sure, actually starts having a conversation about how people in the galaxy will refer to a person's appearance using words like Western, Southern, or Eastern.
Which is weird in space.
Well, and nobody knows why they do it. You, the reader, are supposed to know that it's an old Earth thing, but they don't know why.
Yeah, I see.
And whoever is talking about it, and again, I think it's Harry Seldon, wonders why there's no Northern. But based on the description, you can pretty much guess what the Eastern people look like. You know, the Eastern people, the Southern people are black people. And the Western people, I think, are white people, which, of course, leaves out all kinds of different people. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, your stereotypical, you know, Chinese or Korean looking person, your stereotypical African looking person, your stereotypical European. I mean, there's lots of human morphologies that don't fit into those three.
Specific. Also, race is a stupid social construct anyway, but yeah.
Exactly. But that's the only time I remember, and I'm surprised I even remember that. Well, the reason I remember it was because I wasn't sure what it meant. Like, Asimov had the character specifically wonder why there were no Northerners. And I think at the time what I thought Asimov was getting at was that the people who probably should have been called Northerners were Caucasian people, but since they went to the United States and basically wiped out native people of North America and South America, they became known as the Westerners and nobody replaced the Northerners, so to speak.
It could have been.
That's kind of what I thought he was thinking, but I didn't know. I couldn't figure it out. But I remember trying to piece that out as to what was Asimov trying to say. But that was the only that was the only treatment of race I recall him ever doing. And I'm pretty sure there are some times where when he talks about a character, he doesn't even really give any clues as to what their skin color is. So I think it's cool that Goyer or whoever has figured out, well, let's make some of these characters, key characters, even female, and maybe even not white, because that makes sense.
I mean, it is cool, but it's not hard. I mean, like, that's a low bar right now.
Agreed.
And you don't even have to want it to do it, because if you made them all white dudes, immediate backlash.
True. I'm not saying anyone should get a medal or a trophy anything. Yeah. I'm just saying
it is pleased that they didn't fuck that up.
Well, and on top of that, though, there's one character in particular they've gender flipped that I actually am excited that they did that. Mm. Like, this is a character I particularly like, and that was particularly male in all of the books that they appeared in. And to make that character female, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like that in particular. So otherwise I don't care who they flip one way or the other. It would be great if there was some kind of proportional representation. Well, not just proportional, but equal, because this is in the galaxy years in the future. I mean, there's no reason not to have an equal representation of everybody, you know, not just 50-50 in terms of sex or gender or whatever, but
the Emperor of the Galaxy still gets to look like Lee Pace.
Well, yes, that's true.
I'm realizing now, I'm pretty sure I never read the other two trilogies. I think I just read the original.
Oh, well, then you
serialized ones.
This seems to, I mean, the according to the preview, I think it's starting in, I want to say, the Forward Foundation. In other words, it's starting not in the original trilogy, but the stuff he wrote later. So you might
the references be I read, I mean, the references I saw solidly fit in the first book. But they may start earlier also. I mean, I don't know. But
doesn't the first book start with someone seeing his, there's a crisis and they're seeing his hologram and he's not even alive anymore?
No. It starts by explaining who he is and what he did and all that stuff. It might be in flashback. I don't know. But we get his whole history of, like, coming up with this crap and what he said and was done.
But I think you're right. I think it's like a, not even really a flashback, just an explanation. I think it starts in an era in the galaxy when he's not even around anymore. That flashback maybe is a good way to put it.
Well, and it's not an insignificant chunk of story either.
Yeah, maybe.
I remember spending a fair bit of time on it.
Yeah, it all blurs together.
Sort of all the attempts he was trying to fix it and convince people and stuff, and then was like, fuck it, we got to do this. And
it just seems like the trailer spent a lot of time in an era where...
I mean, you would have noticed 1,000 times more details than I did,
okay,
without a doubt.
Yeah, it just seemed like... I mean, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean... I saw something from Goyer where he talked about how expansive the whole thing is and how it covers 1,000 years or whatever. It's like, well, then what are you going to do? Is it, I mean, is the first episode,
it's probably going to be very similar to Suicide Squad.
I mean, he's got some successes. I like Batman Begins and Dark Knight. I like both of those things. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But he's hit or miss, I'll grant you. I wasn't really that impressed when I found out it was him. But.
Well, and is he writing this, or is he directing this, or both?
Writing, as far as I know, writing it, I don't know if he's directing or not. Writing it is what I understand.
Well, okay. That's only a trailer at this point. Let's talk about something that's actually out. It's more important.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen it yet. You probably haven't, but you probably will soon, and you should. Netflix has a new documentary called Disclosure.
I don't think I've even heard of it.
It's hilarious that it's called that, because that is also the name of an absolute train wreck of a 1992 movie starring Demi Moore and Michael Douglas, all about sexual harassment and cyber espionage. And it's a disaster. It's also called Disclosure. Don't mix them up. I had heard in passing about it, but then my friend, the friend who... was two bosses ago, not the boss that I just lost today, but the boss before that. Mm-hmm. She starts, she's like, I watched this. Have you seen this? Oh, God, I really want to know what you think about it. So I'm like, okay, fuck, I got to watch it so I can talk about it. So we did. So we watched it last night. To put it in very simple terms, it is a documentary on the history of and the significance of trans representation in media.
I think this might be something that Jazz told me about, but I'd forgotten the title.
It could be.
It probably is.
I think everybody should watch it because it's very good. I think you in particular should watch it because I know you have – you're big into issues of representation and, like, yes, what that means. And this digs into it. Like, it's not just – like, here's why not having good representation – not only just not having representation, but having negative representation and the impacts it can make from that.
Right.
And
this is on Netflix?
This is on Netflix, yep.
I'm pretty sure this is the one Jazz told me about. I'm sorry, Jazz, that I said I'd never heard of it because you did tell me about that.
And it just recently came out. Like, it's one of those that when I log into Netflix, it's like, hey, you want to watch this? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's on our list.
But I would recommend it. It's my feelings on it changed over the movie. Initially, I was like, this is interesting academically. Because it really got into, like, the history, like, original, like, the first films and instances of cross-gender characters in there and what that signified. And we also go very heavy into the intersectionality with race, which is a big thing.
Weren't there some representations in, whatchamacallit, that one movie, that one racist movie, something, what is it? You know, the one
Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but that guy made a different movie before that.
Oh,
that does have a ton. He came up.
Okay.
He came up in this. There might also be in Birth of a Nation. And I've known for a long time about the sort of problematic history of black men in drag as a comedy thing. Mm-hmm, this sort of speculates more into the roots of it and why it's like that. And was very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people talking. There's a lot of talking heads in this thing, and they are, I believe, almost exclusively, transgender individuals.
Yeah,
and lots of famous ones. I mean, we got Laverne Cox, of course, is in there, yeah. And the Candace Kane from Dirty Sexy Money and MK Rodriguez from Pose and things like that. Speaking of which, if anybody's a fan of Pose, second season of Pose is also now on Netflix, so you can watch it if you didn't have it before, which I didn't. I'm very excited because Pose is an amazing show. And also ties in here because we also did have to talk about the drag ball era and how that impacted things too. It did start giving me – I don't know nearly as much about trans masculinity because it just doesn't seem to come up as often, which in my head was that there are more trans women than trans men. But apparently, statistically, they're pretty even. But in the media, they're way more focused on trans women.
Hmm.
And it discusses that a little bit and things like that. And it's – so you get a lot of personal accounts of how trans people, when they were young – dealt with what they saw or didn't see on television and in movies and things like that. And progress has been made and a lot of major milestones where you would get a trans character and you didn't have one before and how it was handled. Apparently there was I didn't know this cause I never watched it, but there was a trans masculine character that showed up in the middle of the L word.
Hmm.
People had a lot of feelings about that.
Huh.
I thought you and your wife had watched all the L words, so I couldn't remember.
We didn't watch all of them. I don't remember. Okay. I mean,
eventually they get a trans man in there.
No, we didn't watch.
And that arc is very weird. Yeah, and I don't know. It ended up sort of coming to more. At the beginning, it was very just like, here's a bunch of information. And it, as it went on, it sort of coalesced into a message about the importance of trans representation in media and just in the world, sort of, and the importance of what that representation looks like.
Yep.
And at one point, they do the thing that you and I talk about all the time. They're like, what we need is just more.
Yes.
Because then if we had more, the shitty examples would no longer be.
Right.
Like, as big. And I was like, yes, I want that in everything.
Yep, right.
Exactly. Like, give me tons of it, and then you can. And the whole thing, and I've been having this recently with my own writing, and in particular my book. I'm like, I really have to own the fact that this is escapist writing, and not in the sense of it's fantasy, but in the sense of this is just how I would like things to be. I in no way can speak to the female or color or even to a degree the trans experience in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to, and I need to make sure I'm not pretending to.
Right, right.
What I am doing is I am writing wish fulfillment, and my wish fulfillment is for a large, diverse cast of people doing whatever the fuck they do.
Yep.
And I think that's a good thing, and I think that has a place in the world, but I need to I need to avoid giving a semblance of saying I'm speaking to their life experience.
Sure, sure.
At the same time, making sure that I'm not contradicting real life experience.
Right.
As can so often happen when white men write about people who aren't white men.
Right.
And it's a difficult line, but that's been coming up more. I'm like, I need to, this is pure escapist fantasy for me.
It's an incredibly difficult line. I mean, I remember when I was first writing Twilight Nurse, and I had you read it and a few other people read it. And it was very important to me to have a diverse, to have, you know, good representation in the very first novel that I was going to write. And I remember you advised me on some things because I had a Native American character, and you specifically advised me on some things. Well, be careful what you're saying, you know, about.
I mean, you used the phrase big heap an awful lot.
And no, come on. No, it wasn't like that. But I remember that was in that character, in regard to that character specifically, you actually weren't sure if I was overstepping, but you just.
Because I also didn't know.
That's right. You didn't know. I mean, I had one of the main female characters was black, and you didn't, we talked about that too.
But I didn't know she was black.
Part of it. Yeah, that's part of it.
There's one spot where you're like dark tanned skin or something, and it's in one place, one time. And I'm like, yeah, no, totally missed that.
But I mean, that meant a lot to me that, you know, for you to give me that feedback and to remind me. I mean, I was thinking about it and trying to be as careful as I could, but you know, you need other voices. Well,
and your books have a crazily diverse cast, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I just really believe in that because, I mean, it just, you see over and over again. I mean, one of the examples I like to use is, you know, in one of the newer Star Wars movies, I believe the person was Korean, and they were writing an article about the new Star Wars movie, and they were talking about how if you'd asked them before they saw Force Awakens, I think it was, if you could ask them, don't you want to see more people who look like you in movies or whatever, they would have said, I don't care about that. You know, that doesn't matter to me. All I care about is if it's good characters or whatever. And yet, you know, there was a pilot in Force Awakens who Asian anyway, I don't know where the actor was cast from, but the person watching anyway felt like they saw themselves on the screen, and they were overcome with emotion that they did not expect.
Yeah.
And so the article they wrote was about how they themselves realized and learned how important representation is. And I know that's true. And so, you know, we, in my own work, my attitude is, there's enough white guys.
Yep.
In everything. I don't need to have more white men in anything any story I tell.
Yeah.
However, I am a white man. So, you know, how do I write characters? I don't just want them to be superficially, you know, female or not white. I want them to be believable. I want someone who is a woman and or a person of color to go, yeah, I can believe this is a person of color or a woman or whatever.
And I'm worried it's going to get old because I come up with like elaborate reasons why their perspective might be different so I don't miswrite them. At the moment defunct but may arise again someday, Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates! ! Becca James Lowenstein is half black. She's technically half black, half Jewish.
Okay.
My way to avoid any of that, the books take place out in space and have nothing to do with Earth. So that helps. Yeah. But she was born and raised on Earth. Mm. So to a certain degree, the way I got around it is she was born and raised almost all of her life in a hippie commune.
Oh.
So completely different perspective. But I still had bits in there about her mother, who's Jewish. Her mother was kind of racist, but like the positive kind of racist and things. Like there was even going to be a bit, because I've had to learn when describing people and skin tone and stuff, you avoid food comparisons or whatever. And so I was going to flip that when describing herself and talking about how her mother always used to call her little toasted marshmallow and be like, yeah, mom was kind of low-key racist, but she meant well.
Well, I mean, I think it, of course, it bears mentioning in conversations like this that, you know, one of the most important ways to get more representation out there is to give people a chance to tell their own stories, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I do think that the people who already have a platform by virtue for, you know, no credit to us who are white and male and who kind of have a platform ready-made for us in this society, I don't think it hurts for us to put in the effort, as long as we're sensitive about it and we are able to take criticism about it also from people who say, hey, that didn't really represent me or whatever.
And you and I have it easy because, and I mean, I'm speaking for you here, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of me is doing this because it's the right thing to do. But mostly, this is just what I want in
me
my
too.
Writing.
You are exactly right.
Like,
yes.
even if there wasn't like an ethical onus on it.
Yeah.
This is what I like.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm going through Netflix or HBO Net or whatever, HBO Max or whatever, and I'm looking for movies and the lead is a white male, not interested.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing against people who like those movies. It's just, I feel like I've seen that story. I've heard that story and I've lived it myself. There's nothing interesting about it to me. It's someone else, that's fine. I'm not saying other people can't like it. I'm just saying that when, as a consumer of media, I'm most interested in experiences that are different. And that usually leads me to a female lead or a person of color or a female of color or a non-heteronormative person or something like that.
Yeah. And as a creator of media, that's fine. And that's like Jordan Peele talks about how he probably won't make a movie about a white family. And everyone's like, oh my God. I'm like, even if he becomes incredibly prolific and does this his whole life, most of the movie's still going to be about white people. You're fine.
They're not going to catch up.
Yeah. You're fine.
It's so weird when, you know,
Chill out.
And besides that, how many white creators even today don't tell stories about anything but white people? And hardly anybody complains about that.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they say, how many women do you think should be on the Supreme Court? And she says 9. And they say, but that's not fair. And she says, well, it was all men for 200 years and nobody said it wasn't fair.
The fact of the matter is, if all other things were equal, it would probably happen sometimes that all of them would be women's. I mean, that would have to happen sometimes just by chance, you know? So it's just, you know, the sort of knee-jerk reaction to the idea that, I don't know, that men and or white people and or straight people might eventually be in the minority or something. And the,
technically, and the by either 2030 or 2050, white people will be not the majority of the U.S. population.
Hmm.
Which is not the same thing as being a minority. I believe we will still be the largest single group.
Yeah,
we just won't have over 50% anymore.
But like,
but also, who cares? We'll still have all the goddamn power. So
who cares? Well, and even if we don't, who cares? I mean,
if we don't, then I care because that's awesome.
Yeah. right.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
No. But you see what I'm saying? It's I just don't even. I don't know. So for me personally, I do agree with what you're saying, that for me, the stories I tell are the stories I want to see. And if they have a preponderance of female voices or non-white voices or non-heteronormative voices, it's because that's what I'm interested in.
And it's interesting how this ties in to my porn preferences. No, I'm kidding. We should answer a question now.
Okay.
That was the only thing I could think of that you wouldn't have a response to. So there, I figure. All right, I'm drawing a thing.
Good. Are you going to guess what's on the card? Is that what this is?
This is Amazing Karnak.
Okay.
Oasis, The Cars, and Rick Springfield. No. All right, this is from Agitalon, so I already hate it.
Okay.
It's also been abridged because he wrote too much. So many of his emails seemed like he was just drunk at the time. All right. This one gets weird, so follow carefully.
Okay.
It's all one sentence, which is part of the problem.
Okay.
What's the best thing to mix into ramen noodles, and why is it peanut butter and chili paste? Signed, Agitalon. I mean, let me hit the second part. The reason you're enjoying that is peanut butter and chili paste essentially is a really poor man's Thai peanut sauce, and Thai peanut sauce is one of the greatest things in the world.
Okay.
I have not done that with ramen. I probably will now. I like the sound of that. Because I love Thai peanut sauce. But what is good on ramen noodles? Or with ramen noodles? Again, you're either frozen or you're just that dead inside. You're not.
I like Thai peanuts. Yeah, you.
It's hard to tell because my screen's always moving with vaguely static image. As though.
You started doing weird things there too.
Historically, what I have put in ramen when I have done it is eggs. I like to stir an egg in there. And green onions. Ramen's a perfect place for green onions. Green onions go almost everywhere, but ramen especially is a good place for it. I do like this idea. I like this peanut butter and chili paste. I could go with that. I also like the idea that that's an easy way to make Thai peanut sauce. Because I love Thai peanut sauce.
You know, I always just put the flavor pack in, so.
Yeah. You know, one time years ago, and I don't know why. I don't remember the circumstances at all. But I historically don't like a lot of soup in my instant ramen.
Oh.
But you need the water to cook it. So I will cook it, I will put the flavor pack in, and then I will drain off most of the broth. Other people I have known who don't like the soup part will just put in half of the powder and then drain the broth and then mix the powder in with the noodles afterwards. That seems too complicated to me. But one time when I was younger, I put butter in it, and then I cooked it for a long time and sort of cooked it down almost to a sauce and kept putting more butter in it. And this is a terrible story because I don't remember how it tasted. I remember looking at that and doing it. I mean, it was butter, so I assume good, but I don't know why it is odd. Soy sauce also, I mean, in cooking in general, and I'm speaking not from experience, those who can't teach, and here I am, it's all about flavor palettes in different types of cooking. I used to have this great sheet of paper that was different regional styles or nationalities of cooking and what the common spices were and what the common ingredients were. And if you use those, you could make something that tasted like that. And in particular, versus a lot of Western types of Western cuisines, a lot of Asian types of cuisine have similarity and are very different from the U.S. And soy sauce is one of those great things. Ginger, garlic used just right. These things can make sesame, another one, a lot of umami thing going on, can make a really interesting flavor palette. And then you can just play with that, add combinations of that to your noodles or to your whatever else.
One thing we used to have in this house, I don't remember how this ever came about, but you'd make the ramen noodles, you'd add the flavor pack and refried beans.
Not gonna lie.
It was pretty good.
My knee-jerk reaction is to punch my computer screen over on your side. But I think that's hasty.
No, it tastes really good. I don't know why, but I don't even know why it was first done in this house. But
because I was refried beans to me do not have a lot of flavor themselves.
Not really.
And so I'm trying to imagine them attached to the flavor of ramen noodles, and I'm having a hard time. But refried beans, in a lot of ways, are a texture, and that texture wouldn't necessarily be.
Yeah, it makes the whole thing very creamy and substantial because it's so much protein.
Yeah,
you
way
know?
More protein that way. Yeah.
And the flavor pack seasons the whole thing. It doesn't make the flavor pack seasoning like what do I say?
I would think the order would be important.
Probably. I didn't come up with the idea.
You ate it. You would.
Yeah, I ate it and I thought it was pretty good. And then you could put other things in it too. I think sometimes the refried beans did have were flavored with chilies or something, and that also made it really nice.
This gets dangerous. Now I'm like, we could put a little cheese in there, and that's the problem. I love cheese. I love Asian cooking. You can very seldom add cheese to Asian cooking, and it's tricky. Like the closest I get is like part of me wants to put like cream cheese in ramen noodles. And I'm sure it would be edible. I have a theory that there is no food that is not still good by adding cream cheese. But I feel like it would be worse than regular ramen.
I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, ramen noodles are just noodles. I mean, just about anything you could add to any other kind of noodle, you can add to it, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you're still using the flavor packet, the flavor packet's where it becomes a thing, that magic salt powder. I don't know. People, tell us your things to put in ramen noodles. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. If you're new, introduce yourself. It's a great time. Mostly we just watch William and Jazz play. It's not verbal tennis. It's more like verbal global thermonuclear war. I don't know. It's big.
No.
It's big tennis. It's long tennis. But anyway, and then we talk about other things. You can talk to us there too. We usually respond in some form. I mean, if we feel like it. And also, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com with your own little comments, questions, and stuff. You could be as famous as Azure Talon.
And you don't have to use your real name if you're embarrassed to be 100%
listening. 100% don't have to use your name.
Yeah.
on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, you can use a fake name or whatever. On emails, obviously, if you've got an email that doesn't have your name or whatever, you can call yourself whatever you want. You can also put in the email that you would like to remain anonymous. And in fact, unless you're on a very special list of people who know who they are, or you have specifically signed it in some fashion, we won't say who you are.
Right.
You have to tell us, or we'll just, it'll be anonymous, which is also fine. Yeah, do it. And then we whatever this just happened, we do this once a week. That's the whole show. And with that, yeah, it'll be interesting for me to report on my first real week of unemployment next week. I think I'm largely going to start in on the stuff I was planning to do this fall, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Not today, though. Today, I'm going to order something terrible for dinner here, stay up as late as I want, and I'm going to sleep in tomorrow.
That sounds like a plan. That sounds like a plan.
All right. And for the rest of you, make some homemade peanut sauce, stick it in your ramen, and smoke it.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.